From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Florida's 2024 lawmaking session comes to an end with the hope one result would be an increase in much-needed healthcare personnel.
Put programs in place and initiatives in place to help us grow our own here in Florida.
Also this week, this year's session enacted a few serious reforms.
I have known, like most of us do, that the Baker Act and Marchman Act are very complicated. They don't work for everybody.
We'll see what else passed and what didn't as lawmakers dropped the ceremonial hanky on the fourth floor of the Capitol and fled town to resume their 2024 re-election campaigns. I'm Tom Flanagan, online and on air. This is Capitol Report and the end-of-week wrap-up of top stories from Tallahassee.
Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU specialty license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our state and nation. More on FSU specialty plates is at fsu.edu/mytag. And from HR Florida State Council, affiliate of the Society of Human Resource Management. Advocating for the workplace on behalf of 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. More at hrflorida.org.
As Florida's regular legislative session came to a close this afternoon, Senate President Kathleen Passidomo was touting her Live Healthy plan. Regan McCarthy reports the package includes several bills that will help increase access to doctors and providers by growing the state's health care workforce.
Passidomo says Florida doesn't have enough doctors to meet its current needs.
Many of you have probably tried to get in to see a doctor, and you got to get your appointment a year in advance.
That problem is expected to get worse. About 300,000 new residents are moving to Florida each year, and Passidomo says they're not bringing their health care providers with them. In December, a state analysis estimated that by 2035, Florida will have only enough doctors to meet about 77% of the expected demand. And healthcare experts say similar shortages are expected across the industry. Passidomo tapped Lakeland Republican Senator Colleen Burton to carry one of the flagship bills in the package aimed at tackling those shortages.
One of the things that we're going to do, among others, is put programs in place and initiatives in place to help us grow our own here in Florida.
The measure increases residency slots for Florida medical students. Data from the Senate shows there's a 75% retention rate for doctors who attend medical school and their residency in state. The measure also increases access to student loan repayment programs and increases education opportunities for other health care providers. Another goal is increasing access to mental health care. Bradenton Republican Senator Jim Boyd says estimates from the federal government show millions of Floridians could be living with mental health concerns.
Varying estimates put those experiencing a serious mental illness in Florida between 300 and 700,000.
Boyd is behind a bill that would create 4 behavioral health teaching hospitals and open the door to do more in the future. Stewart Republican Senator Gail Harrell has a bill to encourage innovation within the healthcare system. Her measure forms a council that will dole out money for innovation grants.
What it really does, it takes the innovation in our communities, using our entrepreneurial system in this country and the wonderful ideas of our business community, our healthcare community, and brings it all together to use innovation. How can we incentivize innovation in the healthcare system?
Other aspects of the Live Healthy plan include a bill that increases access to care for people with disabilities, a measure that makes it easier for out-of-state doctors to work in Florida, and another that expands price transparency. Democrats have lamented that the package doesn't expand Medicaid to more low-income people, but Passidomo has maintained that's a non-starter. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Floridians and their families affected by mental health and substance abuse illnesses may soon get relief from a system that many have long described as broken. The state's process for involuntary psychiatric evaluations is getting a major overhaul under new legislation that cleared the legislature this year, with advocates saying it's long overdue. And we get more on that story from Lynn Hatter.
The Marchman and Baker Acts set out the process for involuntary commitment of people dealing with either mental health problems or substance abuse, but the processes have long been confusing, and even worse for children, traumatic. For years, lawmakers have tried to fix the system through incremental changes, says Republican Senator Aaron Grawl.
I can say that from the beginning of my time in service, I have known, like most of us do, that the Baker Act and Marchman Act are very complicated, they don't work for everybody, but it has seemed like a task too large to take on and overhaul a system.
But this year, says Natalie Kelly of the Florida Association of Managing Entities, something big happened. This year, lawmakers finally did their first major overhaul of the Baker and Marchman Acts in decades.
Yes. Okay. I would definitely say that. In the last maybe 15 years, or 20 years. Yes, I would say so, because this is a major issue.
The proposals lawmakers have cleared streamline the process for evaluations and intakes, and most critically for children, require parents to be notified if their child is being sent for an involuntary exam. The bills also put $50 million toward ensuring that people released from care actually get the services they need. And most people like Kelly are giving the credit for it to Republican Representative Pat Maney of Shalimar for helping move the issue forward in a major way.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move we concur with Senate Amendment 271428 to CS for CS for HB 7021.
Maney is a retired judge and Army Brigadier General. Under the bill, the criteria for involuntary commission has been expanded to include whether a person has a prior history of substance abuse or mental health issues, something that was not present before. And it's a criteria that could help curb unwarranted Baker Acts, especially for kids. But there's still more work to come, says Maney.
This is not a perfect bill. We'll be back looking at some fine-tuning next session, God willing. But this is a good bill, and I ask the House to support it. With that, I close.
One issue left undone is the question of law enforcement's role in the involuntary commission process. Right now, they're often the ones who are making the first determination of whether a person should be sent for evaluation, and many law enforcement officers have openly fretted about whether that's appropriate given they have no backgrounds in psychology or mental health. Still, this year's efforts are gaining praise even as more changes loom. I'm Len Hatter.
The Florida legislature has voted to curtail civilian oversight of law enforcement or correctional officers. The measure would prevent locally governed boards from conducting investigations or inquiries into police misconduct. And as Margie Menzel reports, it has the backing of law enforcement agencies and the House Speaker.
The measure stops local governments from letting civilian boards oversee or investigate complaints of police misconduct. And it lets local police chiefs and county sheriffs form their own boards to review general policies, training, and systemic problems. Supporters of the new policy say regular citizens don't understand the split-second decision-making that law enforcement officers have to endure. Opponents like St. Petersburg Democratic Representative Michelle Rayner say the bill will further erode trust between law enforcement and communities of color.
What we support is good law enforcement. What we support is transparent law enforcement. What we support is law enforcement who understand they are to protect and serve all of the community, not just some of the community.
University of Chicago law professor Sharon Fairley is a former prosecutor who also worked on an oversight board in Chicago. She says such boards are more effective when decisions and policy are made at the local level.
Some police departments may need to have oversight that has full independent investigative responsibilities, right? Because that's what's needed in that community.
Under the bill, any investigations into local law enforcement would still be done by local, state, and federal policing agencies. Fairley also doubts that having the state preempt the 21 Florida cities with oversight boards is good governance.
And certainly where we have state legislatures that are usurping and inserting their wisdom on top of voter referenda, and preempting what voters have said that they want, I certainly don't think that that's appropriate or helpful. That's just anti-democratic in my view.
Governor Ron DeSantis hasn't said whether he plans to approve the bill, but he's made backing law enforcement a priority with programs that offer relocation bonuses to officers who move to the state from elsewhere. Here he's speaking to the Florida Sheriff's Association on January 30th. The occasion, his presentation of bonus check number 4,000 through the Law Enforcement Recruitment Bonus Program.
So we're excited about the success of this program. We're thankful to have so many great people in this profession in the state of Florida. And I don't think it's even a question. If somebody just could wave a wand and say, where would I want to be in law enforcement of all 50 states, they would overwhelmingly choose the free state of Florida.
If DeSantis doesn't veto the bill, it will go into effect July 1st, 2024. I'm Marty Menzel.
After bouncing between both chambers, a controversial bill changing Florida's child labor laws has passed the Florida legislature. Tristan Wood reports the version set to become law is a steep departure from the bill's original language.
The original version would have allowed minors 16 and older to work full-time without parent input and removed requirements for work breaks. It also would have allowed children to work past midnight on school nights. That version passed on the House floor. St. Pete Beach Republican Representative Linda Cheney argued in committee her bill would help minors looking for work.
Nearly a million searches have been performed. How can I get a job as a teen? They want to work. But these restrictions discourage employers from hiring them.
But the Senate didn't like her version. They amended the bill to allow businesses to work minors older than 16 more than 30 hours a week, only if they obtain parental permission via a state-sanctioned form. Senate President Kathleen Passidomo says she's satisfied with the version that passed her chamber.
Well, I think it was way too broad when it was originally filed. And also, it didn't even take into account some of the trades and whatever. So, and this is what the beauty of the process. It went back and forth and amended, and, you know, the House and the Senate talked, and I think we're in a good place.
In the closing hours of the legislative session, the House okayed the Senate's changes, but it was still opposed by Democrats. Cheney pointed out that the bill has now received support from differing interest groups.
I just want to give some information to the members who oppose this that you may find shocking. But this bill is supported by both the AFL-CIO and the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. They did not see any problem with it.
The Florida AFL-CIO, which represents 500 labor unions in the state, opposed the bill until the Senate made changes. Their lobbyist, Rich Templin, says they support the bill, but will be carefully watching as state executive agencies create the permission form.
We intend to be at there every step of the way to help guide the process, to help make any changes to the labor law as good for our kids and our parents as we possibly can.
But not all advocacy groups agree the changes are enough. Florida Rising lobbyist Jackson Oberlink says that while he is glad changes were made after public pressure, the final product is still harmful to Floridians.
Still a very bad bill and will leave children vulnerable to exploitation by bad corporations who only have profits in their interests and not the interests of children's welfare and their education.
The measure was originally drafted by business-friendly advocacy groups. If it isn't vetoed by Governor Ron DeSantis, it will take effect on July 1st. I'm Tristan Wood.
Stores that sell CBD oil, Delta 8 gummies, and similar hemp products may need a new business model. The Florida legislature has passed a bill that reduces the amount of euphoria-inducing THC levels allowed in products sold over the counter, as we hear from Gina Jordan.
Members, it's very clear we were duped.
Lakewood Ranch Republican Representative Tommy Gregory is talking about a bill lawmakers passed in 2019.
We were sold a bill of goods that this was industrial uses, industrial hemp. But when we approved it, we inadvertently permitted the sale of a recreational drug, the sale and use of THC.
Hemp is a cannabis plant with naturally low levels of THC. Florida lawmakers at that time approved the creation of a hemp program at the State Department of Agriculture after Congress removed hemp's classification as a controlled substance.
We believe the advocates when they told us that we were going to approve industrial hemp and they were going to give us rope and textiles and shoes and clothes. But what they really gave us was Delta 9 and Delta 8 and a bunch of other THC derivatives. Why did they do that? Because there's more money in drugs than there is in rope.
The bill limits Delta 9, the most abundant form of THC, to 5 milligrams per serving. It bans Delta 8 THC and similar psychoactive substances. Critics say the move will harm locally owned hemp shops that have popped up in abundance around Florida. They say customers will be forced to seek more potent products elsewhere, like medical marijuana dispensaries.
The state of Florida is picking a winner and a loser today.
Weston Democratic Representative Robin Bartleman says the small businesses will close, potentially putting over 100,000 employees out of work.
Anyone who wants to do business in Florida, I want to provide you with a disclaimer. The Florida legislature at any time can shut down a whole industry. With the amendment we passed yesterday, we are outlawing some of the products that are standardly used by both hemp shops and medical marijuana shops.
Because the legislation does not impact medical marijuana dispensaries, Delta 8 and similar products can still be sold in those businesses. Representative Gregory showed no sympathy for arguments against his bill.
Remember that these are the same business owners that figured out this loophole in the first place. They'll be crafty enough to do something else, and they can still, unfortunately, after this bill passes, sell up to 5 milligrams of Delta 9 THC. Those businesses will not fail if those thousands of emails you got, the people that sent them to you, want to buy Delta 9, because they're still going to be able to.
The Senate passed the bill unanimously, but more than a dozen House Republicans crossed the aisle in a 64-48 vote. Without a veto, the bill will be effective October 1st. I'm Gina Jordan.
A couple hundred people gathered outside the governor's mansion yesterday. They were protesting a bill that would ban the sale of flavored nicotine vaping products in Florida. As Valerie Crowder reports, they were urging Governor Ron DeSantis to veto the bill.
Veto the vape bill!
Veto the vape bill!
Veto the vape bill!
Veto
the vape bill!
Cloud Smoke Shop is among dozens of stores in Tallahassee that rely on flavored e-cigarette sales to stay in business. Co-owner Gary Elisov-Hodes says he's protesting the bill because it would eliminate jobs and hurt businesses like his.
It would kill our local businesses. I am one of, I think, 56 shops just in the Tallahassee area. There's 5,000 stores in the state of Florida.
Elisov-Hodes says 70% of his revenue comes from the sale of flavored vaping devices.
Out of just our two stores, it's about $3.5 million of revenue annually.
He says losing this much money every year would force him to lay off employees, including 21-year-old Carrington Stanford, who's worked at his shop for a couple of years. It was her first time attending a protest.
What is your concern if this bill becomes law?
That I'm going to lose my job and lose the connection with all the people that I met through my job.
Vaping industry group representatives say the bill could cost hundreds of jobs locally and thousands of jobs across the state. And it would force consumers to choose from 23 tobacco-flavored vaping devices that have been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. Stanford says hardly anyone chooses vaping products that taste and smell like tobacco.
I know one guy who buys a tobacco-flavored vape, and that's out of 1,000.
Proponents say removing vaping flavors from the market is aimed at keeping e-cigarettes out of the hands of children. 19-year-old Lila Chafin says she would likely quit vaping if the bill becomes law, but she wouldn't be happy about it.
You're allowed to have your cigarettes. We should be allowed to have our vapes, and it's like no different.
The bill received pushback from Democrats in the House, but got unanimous support in the Senate before it passed this week. Last year, DeSantis vetoed a similar set of vaping regulations, and protesters say they hope he will do the same this year. I'm Valerie Crowder in Tallahassee.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, Derek Hamm with the News Service of Florida, senior writer there and also producer of the weekly Deeper Dive podcast with Derek Hamm, joins us as we're wrapping up this 2024 lawmaking session at the Florida Capitol. Dara, any surprises for you? We started off kind of with a lot of uncertainty how things would be going between lawmakers and Governor Ron DeSantis, given what was then a presidential run for him, and that didn't work out, and things just kind of went on from there. What are some of your impressions coming out of this session?
I think one thing that everyone is talking about right now, the House just passed the revamped social media bill that was the House Speaker Paul Renner's top legislative priority. It was House Bill 1, which gives you an indication of how important it was to the House leader. And it was designed to ban kids under age 16 from having social media accounts. His belief is that social media is very dangerous. It causes kids to commit suicide. There's bullying. There's anorexia related to it. So he's the father of two young children. He felt very strongly about that. The governor was away campaigning. The House passed it. The Senate passed it, made a little changes, sent it back to the House. And before the House passed the revised version of it, the governor said he didn't like the bill. He thought there were parts of it that might be unconstitutional. So he telegraphed that he would be considering vetoing it, but House went ahead and passed it anyway. The governor did veto it. The lawmakers scrambled to address the governor's concerns and passed I would call it a watered-down version of it. So I think that was kind of interesting, just that the governor flat-out said what his thoughts were about this measure. The House went ahead and passed it anyway, and then they really had to come back and capitulate to the governor's concerns. I'm sorry, I'm a little distracted. There is one of the dogs that was training outside. It's inside the Capitol now barking, so I don't know if you can hear it, so I apologize. Things happen in the last few days. Things get a little crazy.
Yeah, well, we won't make any commentary about the Capitol going to the dogs. Certainly we don't. But still, there were an awful lot of culture war issues enacted last year in deference to Governor Ron DeSantis' presidential run that didn't seem to be quite as evident in this year's lawmaking session. Certainly some things, but not quite as many. And there was a little bit more maybe independence on the part of legislative leadership since Governor DeSantis is no longer running for president.
I would say that's true of the Florida Senate. The Florida House went along and passed several bills that Senate President Kathleen Pasadomo put the ixnay on, including a bill that would lower the age to purchase long guns from 21 to 18. If you and your listeners remember, it was part of a school safety package passed in the aftermath of the horrific killings at Marjory Stoneman Douglas in Parkland. The House went ahead and passed some of these more controversial items. Another one was the change in driver's licenses for transgender folks that would require their driver's license to match up with their sex assigned at birth. And now the Governor DeSantis's administration has made that change through a rule or a policy decision. So it's happening anyway. The House passed that. The Senate didn't pass that. I was actually recording some podcast items with different lobbyists yesterday, and I asked, who do you think had the most influence on the legislative session? One lobbyist, Chris Doolin, told me he thought it was Senate President Kathleen Pasadomo. I had heard at the beginning of session that she was not going to sign off on any of the what we call the culture war issues.
Well, where do we go from here? What was left undone to your way of thinking that they'll have to deal with either in an upcoming special session, which is
kind of unlikely given the fact we're in an election year and these guys don't like to come back to Tallahassee when that's in play. But at least next year when they return to do the session for 2025.
I think there still are property insurance issues hanging out there. They have said repeatedly that the changes that they adopted a few years ago will take several years before consumers see the impact of that. I don't think it's going to lead to insurance rates going down. I think what it might lead to is a little more stability in the market. They're still concerned about the influx of policies to Citizens, which is now almost 1.2 million policies in Citizens. It has ballooned over the past few years. So I think we might see some property insurance stuff next year. I do think that we could come back for a special session if we have another horrific storm like Idalia or Ian. We might see legislators come back to address those immediate needs. If they can't do it through a legislative budget commission, they might do something there, tax breaks or whatever for those folks. You know, I was talking on my podcast, I had a lobbyist, Nick Iorossi, who was very close to Governor DeSantis. He was a co-chair of his finance campaign for his presidential race. And I asked, is there really more woke stuff to be done? And I think we're not going to see as much of the anti-woke from the governor. I think lawmakers are exhausted from that. The debates on these issues are heartfelt. They're pitting people who are in the chamber together with each other. You know, these guys, even across the aisle, they're friends. They eat together. They do activities together, maybe not as much intrapartisan activities as there used to be. But I think there's going to be maybe a shift away from that. We do have two new leaders coming in, Danny Perez from Miami. We're going to have the 305 back in control in the Florida House again. So that'll be interesting. And we will have Senator Ben Albritton, who is a member of the agriculture industry. So we'll see new leadership, new priorities, and a lot of new House and Senate members. So it'll be a fresh mix in November.
It'll be interesting to see that dynamic and even more interesting to tap into your more than 20 years of expertise covering the Capitol to see what you think of it all. Derek Ham with News Service of Florida and producer of the Deeper Dive with Derek Ham podcast on Capitol Report. Thanks so much, Derek. Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Thanks also to Valerie Crowder. Technical support for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox. I'm Tom Flanagan, and next week Capitol Report returns to a weekly schedule. Each Friday on many of these Florida public radio stations, we'll be back online and on air with more reports from the state capitol. We hope you'll join us there.
Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU specialty license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our state and nation. More on FSU specialty plates is at fsu.edu/mytag. Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.